Okay, next on the agenda is the CODAN radio upgrade. Chief.
So, at the county chief's meeting, we've been talking about a radio upgrade project for the entire county. And I realize that it's probably been a while since you guys have had any sort of updates about it. What's going on with it? So I kind of prepared this report to kind of let everybody know some of the background of it and where we are in that process right now. The highlights of that, and prepared that report for you. Hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at it. The highlights of it are really that a lot of the equipment now is failing, and we have a lot of dead spots throughout the county based on the topography of the islands. The biggest concern is with County Public Works and the Sheriff's Department, in that they use what they call an 800 frequency, and then the Sheriff's Department's using its UHF. And theirs have a single point source of transmission, which is a telephone line constitution, which causes, and Rick, I'm glad you're here. You can please let people know that if I misspeak on anything, I'd appreciate it.
Doing well. We are.
So basically, that transmitter is being held together with bubble gum and baling wire. And it's old technology, it's starting to fail, it needs to be replaced. We have similar issues here on San Juan Island. Our transmitter's on top of Hillview Terrace and a water tank there. We have redundancy with the fire department because we're dealing with different frequencies. So they have another transmitter and tower in the same location. They also have one at the north end of the island, fire that is. And then there's a backup on the fire station itself. So the realization has come that we're much better served with a system that's countywide and more robust. Generally in rural areas, because of topography, those areas are forced to build microwave relay towers so that they can get simulcast to get good coverage throughout their service area. We're in kind of a unique position with Opelco now and their build out of the fiber optic backbone throughout the county. And then their integration or their partnership with T-Mobile and creating these mini cell tower sites throughout along this backbone of fiber optic. What Opelco is willing to do is also allow space for radio transmissions, and this is where CODAN is a company out of Vancouver, to come in, and they've put together a proposal to say we're gonna build up these sites here with radio transmitters that are then linked through the fiber optics, and so they can simulcast to provide coverage throughout the island. And I provided a couple of maps, and you can see it's based on, the red is bad, green is good. And on the first map, again, it's based on transmissions coming off of Mount Constitution, so it's not as indicative of our island, but it gives a good basis for comparison. Using the fiber optic network and backbone for San Juan Island specifically, they're looking at four sites that would pretty much take care of the island. One little spot along Dead Man's Bay, I guess is aptly named, and a couple of little spots along by Point Caution would not be serviced. Again, the other thing is it's an opportune time, given that we're talking integration with fire and EMS, we can reduce that redundancy. Their original proposal had four sites for fire and four, you know, sites exactly the same for EMS. We can make one site. The other thing is that we can have, in our proposal, we're asking for a county-wide channel. So if there's an MCI, a mass casualty incident, earthquake, tsunami, the entire county can go to that one channel and know where resources are allocated, where resources are coming from, and to be able to talk with each other. There are then three other channels that would be allocated through these towers that would allow basically island to island. So San Juan Island would have a dedicated channel, Orcas would have a dedicated channel, Lopez and Shaw would share one. And so that would be the three, the fourth being the countywide one. And the proposal has been brought forth that way. It's expandable, it's modular, There's generator backup at each of these small cell towers, so it looks like it's a pretty well thought out program. All the county chiefs are on board with it. They think it's a great idea. We're replacing failing equipment as it is with state of the art right now, equipment that can be expanded if we need be. We take care of our, we cover our service areas, we eliminate the dead spots, and we expand our capability in that we can talk countywide. Of course, we're all for it. The big thing is the cost of this. Cost of the project is estimated to be, I think it's 2.3 million.
It actually went to 2.6.
2.6, right?
Yeah, with the statewide, or with countywide dispatch.
Got it. So the plan for allocating those funds was that it would be split basically three ways. Sheriff's office would pick up one third of the cost of that build out and maintenance. Public Works would pick up the second third, and all the EMS agencies, Orcas Fire and Rescue, Lopez Fire and Rescue, Shaw Fire and EMS, and San Juan Island Fire, San Juan Island EMS, would then split one third of the total cost based on the number of sites that would be required to provide coverage for their island. I think I worked out some of the costs involved. We're basically looking at about $21,000 to $22,000 over the course of the next seven years, because CODEN is willing to do a lease kind of payment plan to upgrade that. Then there would be annual maintenance costs that would happen after about $15,000 a year. And again, I kind of reworked some of the numbers, figuring that instead of fire having its own separate costs and EMS having its own separate costs on San Juan Island, that we would do this combined.
23 is the lease, or about 23,000 or 22,000 is the lease, the 7-year lease, and 15,000 is operational a year.
So I'm trying to remember how I worked that out. I think it would be, yes, 21,000 to cover the cost of the lease plus 15
a year.
A year for 7 years, and then would reduce down to 15 a year after that for maintenance and upgrades. Did I get that?
Is that inclusive?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't focus right now on a number, because they're coming back with the system that you guys had suggested. It's a 7-year lease program that actually it's a simple interest at I think about 2 or 3 points, so it's very reasonable. And it has the option that even if you get a grant, they'll reduce the principal. I think the reality is going to be somewhere around probably $100,000 to $200,000 for you guys over the course of the 7 years. So the $21,000 would probably be for each year for the 7 years. After that, there is no cost for equipment. Then it just becomes a operational cost to Rock Island per transmitter site, which is $500 a month. And that entails them doing the maintenance, entails them supplying backup power, entails them supplying the site, and so forth.
And then, if I recall correctly, CODEN would have a yearly fee as well to kind of manage upgrades and maintenance.
There'll be a maintenance fee, but I don't think that it kicks in, because the project's under warranty for X amount of years, and so there's a portion that I don't think kicks in, and then it does. So again, he's supposed to be working the numbers that Ron is supposed to get either this week or next week to get to you. And the idea being is that you'll present it to your group, and what Ron's going to be looking for them is an MOU from each EMS/fire agency that will commit to the project, so that he can present it to the board or to the county board on June 4th.
June 4th is the next county council meeting.
Yeah.
And they would ultimately have ultimate say over yes or no on the project. CODEN has also expressed their willingness to, once the commitment was there, that they would start build out before they require any sort of payment.
Right, they do skip payments till next year so everybody could fit it into their budget, so that it would be, they could get started on the project and really probably get to 60-70% completion by year end, before that they would look for payment.
And so basically, the reason I put together this report so that you were aware, you knew where we were, and hopefully when we get to that point where we're asked, where we're actually being asked for the support and the financial commitment, that you're aware of it, you're ready to go with it, and hopefully you can approve it.
So, Dr. Robinson. What group has done the due diligence of, you know, is this a good company, their track record, other vendors? Has anyone done that?
That I can't speak to, being that I'm relatively new to this process in terms of being part of that chief's meeting. Sheriff Krebs has kind of taken the lead on that, and maybe Rick, you can answer.
Yeah, this project, as I understand, has been going on, Warren, for like 7-8 years.
Yeah.
And it really was in front of Public Works, and Ross was working on it. Then when Ron came on board, he kind of picked it up at the Sheriff's Department. There are several counties in Washington State that have used Codan. He's been in communications with them. They're all exceptionally happy with the product that they've gotten. And as Carl laid out, the big opportunity for this county is that this system, if Rock Island wasn't in place, would be about $8
million. Yeah.
Because you have the backhaul on the fiber is what really drives the cost down on this. So there's 20 sites. And it's a voted system. And so there's two brains that manage this. But the backhaul is all in the fiber. And so they don't have to put any microwave sites, make ugliness out there in the county, and so forth. So it is really a reasonable system. And right now, for both, all three, Public Works, Sheriff, and EMS, there's only about 50 to 60% coverage of the county. It's amazing how much uncovered areas there are for communications in the emergent field that it is. It just is.
Yeah.
So there's been due diligence.
Yeah, it makes.
So the answer is someplace between Krebs and Public Works.
They've done their due diligence.
Okay.
That's my understanding. And of course, the big issue, safety issues.
Yeah, and we're just asked to ride along on their due diligence. Yeah. I have to think about that. I might want to see that.
Absolutely.
So I think conceptually this is
almost
a no-brainer. I mean, with 60% dead space, communication dead space, my goodness, this is a huge safety enhancement in the right direction. So.
No, I'm glad to hear that other counties are happy. I would just,
absolutely.
That was my issue.
Thank you, Carl.
Sir, do you have any other questions? I'm glad, Rick, thank you for being here. And
you're very welcome. You did a nice job. None of that topic. You're taking over the agenda, by the way.
It's going to be a two water bottle kind of meeting.
No, that means another hour? No way.
No, I'm not
that long. You have a 15-minute limit, too.
Yes, sir.
So the next item is GEMT.
Right. I'm glad Chris is here as well. This is very, very exciting. And I think when Chief Martin first explored this option, we really didn't have any idea where it was going to go. It's a voluntary program based on providing services to Medicaid patients. We all know that our actual cost of operations is X, what we charge is Y, and what we get reimbursed from the managed care organizations is Z. And there's a big disparity. And the realization came that we need to beef up these programs. So Chief Martin applied for it, did all the paperwork. It was easier for us than a lot of different EMS providers because most are fire EMS and they had to come up with a formulary that said of our X number of calls, so many were EMS calls, so many were structured fires, so many were wildland fires. We had it easy because it was just, if we went on the call, it was an EMS call. So he prepared all that together. We've been getting payments based on this GEMT program. The big exciting news is that they've reconciled all the data for calendar year 2017. And it looks like we have about $435,000 due EMS. It should be coming to us. The hitch is that in order to secure those funds, The Washington Healthcare Authority needs a payment, which they're calling the IGT, and that number is 96.
Intergovernmental transfer.
Intergovernmental transfer of $96,412.83. Once they have that, they can then go to the federal government and say, look, we've got the money from these providers. The federal government then gives the matching funds for that plus the payout. Then the Washington State Healthcare Authority divvies that out to the managed care organizations who then pay out to the providers. My understanding is that $96,000 that we're going to pay to the Washington Healthcare Authority comes back to us along with the extra money minus 20%, which is an administrative fee.
So 20% of what we sent of them, what of we, the 96,000.
Of the 96,000. So we could be looking at about $400,000 coming back to us.
About 416.
Yeah. So, again, wanted to make you all aware of that's coming in. And of course, the big thing is that 96,000 going out. And I did look; there's no Nigerian prince involved. So far, so good. We verified with other EMS agencies who are looking at this money
And our billing provider.
Yes. So, for example, like Snohomish County is going to have to cut a check for like $750,000 before they get their $2 million back. They do obviously have a much bigger business that way. But I've alerted the county auditor's office, Robin Garcia, who handles the junior districts, trying to get a BARS code set up. I've been contacted with the Washington Healthcare Authority so that we're matching up with them so that we can make this payment. And it's due. We received the letter May 15th, which means the Washington Healthcare Authority needs the IGT payment by June 15th, and then the disbursements will happen. So we're within our regular accounts payable cycle, kind of poised and ready to go. You guys need to be aware of that, and I do believe we need a resolution to authorize that, a payment of that size.
Or a motion.
Or a motion.
I still make that motion that we authorize $96,412.83 to pay for the IGT transfer.
I second. Any discussion?
I guess we have 2 seconds. I'll third it, and I think we just had a vote. I'm sorry.
Try to call for a vote anyhow.
Yeah, go ahead.
Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And you didn't vote, did you?
I did. I did. Oh, I said aye.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't hear you.
It is. Okay. It's very good news, and I think
because I don't have my microphone and your batteries are dead.
Yes.
I do want to publicly point out this is the hard work and foresight of Chief Jerry Martin. He did all the legwork for this, set it up, worked behind the scenes and in the background, and it's really allowing us to be able to take some of those deferred things. The fact that we've got vehicle replacements that we've been pushing back, we've got defibrillators that are no longer under service that we're going to need to deal with. It's not like, well, I mean, it's going to be easy to spend the money, but to spend it wisely and really it's going to help us because a lot of those capital improvements were deferred, delayed, kind of pushed back, and it's going to help us take care of some of these radio issues. This is all money that we can budget for and allocate for, and this is going to help a huge amount.
Yeah,
and do you? Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have a sense of once you've made your payment and they show the federal government that they have the money, and then what's the turnaround on that?
The original one is that what a lot of these departments were hearing was the end of June, but what then I got from the last correspondence with the Washington Healthcare Authority is more like July, mid July, beginning of August.
Of this year.
Of this year. Of this year. Yeah, hopefully. And then, of course, we're looking that we started getting reimbursements in 2018, but I think there's still half of 2018 that they're looking to reconcile. Mm-hmm. But we've been moving forward, so there should be another. Pam had asked me a little earlier. My calculations, and again, I'm still learning to navigate this, but it looks like in 2018 we received about $67,000?
Yes.
So we could assume that we're going to get about an equal amount of that, because that was half the calendar year. So we may be looking at another $67,000 for the remainder of 18 that wasn't paid. And then, like we reported for us right now, year to date, we're at 95, almost 96,000 of what's been coming in for 2019.
But some of what's come in 2019 was reflective of 2018
and
as
17?
Well. No.
No, only 2018.
Yeah. This
we're
is entirely, this payment that Carl's talking about is entirely related to 2017.
Okay.
So basically, it took them, I mean, we were talking about this program, I think from in 2016, it was supposed to be starting at the end of 2016. And we even had it in our budget. And then it was supposed to be kicking in by the end of 2017. You know, so it was about a two-year delay for it to kick in. But, yeah, so they brought in our... so then once it finally started, it was... I can't remember the effective date of when we started receiving the monies, or... When the money started coming in last year, if the effective date was July 1, I can't remember if it was July 1 or if it was a different date for the effective date of that those reimbursements. But another component of this is that the rates, they basically look at the average, what we get paid, well, the average cost per transport, and then how many of those transports were paid by, were Medicaid transports. And then what gets reimbursed, there's kind of two factors in that. One is, is the person that's on were they on in the Medicaid program before the Affordable Care Act went into effect or after? And those, the reimbursements for those are at different rates and amounts, and one of them is quite a bit more than the other. So obviously, the longer this program goes, and the further away we are from the effective date of the Affordable Care Act, as it relates to this GEMT, the less people that are going to be on the pre side and the post side. So that mix is going to change over time, and that's kind of hard to know. You know, I mean, we'll be able to. I'm sure our budget and or forecasting for this year is going to be a lot more accurate than it was. But you know, we still maybe it's not going to be perfect, and it's going to take a little while to get that dialed in as we learn how the program's working and what the funding is available. And, you know, one thing that I kind of wonder about is once news starts getting out of how much is actually coming into some of the agencies, those that chose not to participate may start participating, and who knows if that's actually going to be, if that'll take away from our honeypot.
Because it's a pool for the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the fewer people participating, the bigger the paycheck.
Yeah, and there were a number of agencies that didn't because they just thought it was too much work to go through it. And so I think we had always thought that, you know, we had thought this amount coming in was maybe going to be 60,000 or so, 80,000 maybe. But so it came in a lot more than we expected.
Thank you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Appleton.
So upstream from Jerry, who did a great job with this, also Rick Larson, Adam Smith, with the Affordable Care Act, I think this comes through Chapter 3 or 7 in that end. Maybe we should investigate with Rick Larson if what kind of role they played in it and send a thank you note. Signed by the commission and Jerry.
Absolutely.
Because this is going to come for, these funds will come up again in the next COBRA, and it would be nice to have, they have that, so that when they talk Medicaid, which they're always trying to cut, and HHS is back to trying to cut even more now, that we've appreciated that, and they have some evidence of the foot soldiers really working with it and doing good things with it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we'd get to that. I don't know if we could just talk to Larson's office and see what they would like or something, and just send them a note of appreciation, signed by, you know, a bunch of people that appreciate it.
I actually agree with that. Pam and Nathan, can you craft a draft for us for the board to take a look at?
This is more on our Chief Kutzing's project. Might be.
Okay, Chief.
Whatever. I'll take a crack at it.
Okay.
We're including Chief Martin in it, thank
you. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. Please.
And have Nathan do a spell check then, would you?
Well, I'd like Chief Martin to sign it when we send it upstream so he can.
Sure, why not?
He's the one that did all
the work. He made it happen for us.
Well, you know how I love being on committees, so.
Okay.
Happy to help.
Larson, you said, was pretty instrumental. Dr. Appleton, who were the other people that you were.
Adam Smith, I think, got it first, out of ninth. Adam Smith. I mean, who was there? Larson, Smith, Heck wasn't there.
It's also part of a state legislature thing.
Yeah, the state legislature. And I even think that the East Side voted yes on this. I mean, I read those things, but I didn't memorize it.
Okay.
Very good.
Because we'd like that funding to stay as budgets get reconsidered.
Okay, are we ready for the next agenda item?
Okay.
Long-term care feasibility funding, kind of a reiteration.
Yes, as we were talking about earlier, Lopez and Orcas have declined to contribute any financial contribution to the feasibility study right now that's going on. They support the idea and behind it, but because they are in the middle of their clinic negotiations still with University of Washington and after hours and just the list goes on, they are not able to put this on their to-do list at this time. So if we would like to contribute to the feasibility study, we can do our own motion and the amount that you would like the district to contribute, if that is what you would like.
So take out the contingency.
Right.
Take basically out the contingency, yes.
And that was your motion, I think, historically, wasn't it, Warren?
Right. Okay. It was dependent on them. So what I would ask then, and I'm willing to go forward with more money, but I'd ask them for a letter saying that they support the study, even though they don't do it financially right now, but a letter.
Mm-hmm. I can
so that we've solidified their position down line, because there will become a division like there has in the last 70 years that the islands will start. I'd like to get them lined up saying, no, you supported it, we put the money in, you stick to your guns. If they decide that it's then going to become a San Juan project. We don't want it to be that. We want it to be a county project.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the motion?
That's right here.
There we go.
Is that your hearing aid?
No. That's one of my teeth. Oh, now I talk like this. Oh, there's.
Just strike the.
I would like to make the motion that we strike the $10,000 contingency on matching funds from the other two county PhDs. I so move.
And the level is the same, $10,000? Did you say that?
I'm open to discussion on that.
Uh-huh. You got to make a motion.
I move that we strike the contingency of $10,000 and put $15,000 into our donation to the research on this issue.
I second that motion, assuming that, well, it's open to discussion now, but one of my further comments is, can we afford it?
Yeah.
I answered that the last
can afford it, at present, it would come out of our reserve funds, but I recently received a letter from Medicaid. They're
They are just now auditing and shoring up their 2011, 2012 funding. So I received a letter saying that we have the possibility of getting back about $45,000. So that would help in funding this 15 and then shoring up some other things that we've been over budget on. So I wouldn't want to go over 15 at this point.
What's the total cost of the feasibility study 50. Predicted?
About 50,000.
50 to 55.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we have a looming crisis.
Oh, absolutely.
In this community, if not now. Mm-hmm. So I'm in support of 15.
Yeah. We need to keep the ball rolling. The feasibility study is
the beginning.
The beginning, but it's very much akin to developing Peace Island. And Jody Corona was intimately involved in that. And it kept the focus of the community on, hey, we need a replacement for the old Inter Island Medical Center. So that's part of the equation, too.
And it will come back with data from not only San Juan Island, but it will have data on the other islands also. So it is helpful for the whole region.
It'll piggyback on some of the information from the CHNA, too.
And I did not put in the motion the part about asking them to send us a letter. I think that's more administrative than anything.
I can contact the superintendent over there.
Because it is going to benefit them.
What I can get.
We'd like the letters back, so in case that becomes an issue with a new council or new people over there. You know.
Any further discussion, Dr. Mark?
Last time we talked about this, we discussed gifting public funds. How does the present circumstances change?
Well, in my mind, it changes because, you know, the PhD 2 and 3 are not, at this point in time, willing to go forward. And then imagine, you know, to me, replacing any facilities that we lost here locally. So I think it's going to be a local ball game. It might ultimately be that, even though the design is countywide in its scope, but I think the reality of it is, home base is going to get the enhancement, just like Peace Island Medical Center. Sure, a few Orcas people utilize that, Lopez people and Shaw, but the vast majority of people frequent that as well as tourists, the local folks within our district. So I think that's discounted. It's not completely mitigated, but I think it's legitimately discounted to the level that I'm going to vote for this motion. So,
how's the funding coming in for Inter Island Healthcare Foundation?
What's the latest, Pam?
We haven't. We get a $100 a month pledge from one gentleman, but I haven't had any other pledges or money coming in through the PayPal. The community as a whole has not been approached. I mean, we've had articles in the paper and such, but as far as the bigger donors, there really has not been a campaign, you know, to reach out for that. We have it, you know, I would like to see some type of big fundraiser at some point. This is an area that our whole island should be looking at and getting behind. So maybe after we get the data and we can show that, then they will be more apt to want to get behind it to see what is possible that we can do.
I think private donations will come to support the feasibility study mark. I just had a private conversation here within the last couple of days, and so, you know, it's not the first for this individual, and I think what the level of contribution is going to be, I don't know. But, and Evan Perlez is also has contacts that he has previously talked to. And I think we'll make it. I hope the Croak will make it. This $15,000 will be, if it passes, will be a step in the right direction, frankly.
Yeah, almost halfway there, a little shy, but
spoke with Evan Perlez a couple hours ago, and he's he'd mentioned before of writing an op-ed piece to get this thing surfaced, and it has yet to happen. And I'm wondering if we held the motion until we had an op-ed piece appear in the paper and then follow that with the motion. The timing would be such that it would be helpful to the ultimate end of priming the pump.
Well, we can, you know, put the money in now, and the op-ed could say the PhD has given money to this because they believe it's an important community issue.
Well, my point is that the op-ed piece has not yet appeared, and if there's some motivation to get that moving, that might be helpful.
Well,
I'm willing to help Evan with that.
What's that?
I'm willing to help Evan with that if you want.
That would be
last time you had me, made
and
me the.
Carl, we can have. You do the spell check, Carl, then?
On it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I've offered to help as well.
So, okay, I'm going to call for the vote. We have a motion on the table with a second. And so all those in favor say aye.
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 Dr. Mark?
I'm going to wait. I'll say no. I'd like to see.
Okay. You're going to say no or abstain?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Okay, motion passes. 3-1. And now we move on to the last item that's under new business. A request for a meeting schedule change for the next regular scheduled board meeting for the month of June. And this actually happened last year. Pam and I are scheduled to attend a joint meeting between the Association of Washington PhDs and the Washington Association of Hospitals. And that conference goes into Wednesday and held again in Lakeshore Land. So it would, if we stuck to the Wednesday date, it would mean that we would miss out on many hours of that conference. And we would like to ask that the meeting be moved to Thursday, a day after, as it was last year.
That would be June 27th.
Yeah.
Yep. Wonderful.
Also, while we are on that subject, we've been skirting the issue of November and December meetings, and I would like to get that shored up so that we can get it announced and everybody will know and how it fits into their holiday schedules. In November and December, the fourth Wednesday of the month puts it on like the night before Thanksgiving and then Christmas. So possibly could we hold it on the third Wednesday of the month of November and December?
Yes.
I go for that. Warren?
I go for that.
Dr. Mark? Okay.
Just with knowing that we're not going to have the numbers from the county,
We will. It'll be close. Well, we.
Yeah,
but we should have them. Yeah.
Yeah, but still sometimes that's a stretch.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
It's going to be a bigger stretch on the third.
I think it's more important to go ahead and have
I will not be at the July meeting. I'm having a family reunion with my family in Mosquitoes in northern Michigan.
Okay. We'll miss you.
I'll bring home some mosquitoes.
That's the last item on the agenda. The meeting's adjourned. Thank you so much.